Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining me this hour for conversation about the city of Columbus, things happening in and around it, Columbus Mayor Michael B. Coleman. If you have a question or comment for the mayor, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ann. It is great to be here once again.
It's been a long time, so there's a lot to talk about.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's start with the proposed levy for the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium. It's a permanent 1.25 mil property tax levy that would cost the owner of a $100,000 home about 44 bucks a year, up from 21. One of the issues that popped up repeatedly last week when we talked about it with supporters and opponents was the proposed downtown zoo satellite. Was that your idea?
Well, let me just say this. I've always felt there was a need to have a presence of the zoo in the central city. And the truth is that I love the zoo. I think everybody loves the zoo. It's out there. And the truth is there's a lot of people that don't have access to the zoo. As great as it is, it's wonderful. And I think about the central city kids, the kids in the inner city that don't have transportation to get to the zoo. And I know how valuable the zoo is in terms of education, in terms of experience, and how it can change people's lives. And I want the lives of our young people in the central city to be as important as the lives of the kids that can get to the zoo now. And so, to me, having a presence of the zoo in a central city location is an important concept, and I support that idea.
Do you think the downtown is still missing something?
Downtown has, in terms of just generally speaking?
Yeah, do you think that's something that the downtown needs?
I think downtown needs ongoing activity, ongoing change. A city that stays the same falls behind, and there needs to be continued growth and opportunities, family focus. It needs parks. It needs new residential opportunities. It needs new jobs downtown. And the jobs that come downtown, frankly, drive the economy for the entire central Ohio, frankly, the whole state of Ohio. It is the shining light in our state. The truth is that while our investment downtown is not as great as our investment in the other parts of our neighborhoods, because there's more investment in our neighborhoods, it's just not talked about the way it is downtown because it's a smaller area, that the bulk or something like 25% of our income tax comes from jobs downtown, just in square mile area. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there are things that need to happen downtown. Absolutely.
A renewal on the zoo tax would most mm-hmm. likely have no trouble passing. Are you comfortable with the amount?
I support it. I support the tax. I think it's the right thing to do for our community. And I endorse it. And if that's the amount they have selected in order to pay for the future of the zoo and the capital improvements and other things that the zoo is doing together with the downtown presence, I think it's a good package and we should support it.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest, of course, this hour, Columbus Mayor Mike Coleman. If you have a question, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can check out our Facebook page, too. Americans for Prosperity, supported by billionaire brothers David and Charles Koch, is spending money opposing the zoo levy. What do you make of that? It's definitely put us on, it got more publicity for the zoo levy, that's for sure.
I think the Koch brothers are carpetbaggers. I believe that people in Columbus, whether you support the levy or against the levy, can make our own decisions without the interference of some outsider that out of Washington, and all they do is write checks. And I believe that their presence in Columbus is only the beginning only the beginning. And I think our voters ought to be insulted by outsiders coming in and saying, look, this is, you know, we know everything, and here's how you should vote. And they're going to be involved in other things in the city. This is just the beginning. I think our voters are smart. They can make their own decisions based upon the information they have. And I'm saying this not because I'm a supporter of the zoo levy. I'm saying this because we can make our own decisions. There's people are against it and people are in favor of it. Let the people decide.
The issue of regionalism has come up in discussions about the proposed zoo levy. Mm-hmm. State law prevents regional taxation for something that's located in one county. But has the time come for a closer look at that? The issue of why aren't people in Delaware County supporting it? And of course, the answer to that from the proponents of the tax levy is, well, they do. They support it with public works, infrastructure, different kinds of services, emergency services and so forth, which I'm sure you can relate to as a mayor of a big city. But what about the regionalism idea?
You know, that's worth looking at in the future, I guess, but that's not where we are now. And the fact is that the city of Columbus and our county receive the predominant bulk of the benefit of the zoo, the jobs, the income tax, the experience, and our taxes support the zoo, but we also receive the benefit and the economic benefit of the zoo. Delaware County doesn't.
Charlotte in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi there. I just want to say to the mayor, good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
And I'd like to say I agree with what you said first about the Cook brothers. I think that the Columbus voting public can't be bought. And and then second thing, I'm for the zoo. I love the zoo, and I think it's great to have a place downtown that the downtown kids can go to. But Mayor, you know yourself that a lot of the downtown kids will not be able to afford the admission to the zoo downtown. I don't know what it's going to be, but the one out, you know, in Delaware County is expensive. Would there be a free day for the zoo downtown?
I'm very confident that the zoo administrators will do things that make it very affordable downtown. The issue is not, for those who live in the central city, it's not the cost of entering the zoo, although I do think they'll make some...
There are free days.
Free days, you know, and they'll figure that out. The issue is transportation. That's what it is. And I think folks in the central city ought to have as much chance to go to the zoo as anyone else does, and it's a transportation and access issue. And I love the zoo, and they can't help being out there. They've been out there forever. And I just think there ought to be more of a presence in the central city so central city kids and families can enjoy it as well.
From what I understand, admission prices for the downtown satellite operation would be about a third less than the Powell or the Delaware County location. Charlotte, thanks a lot for that call. If anyone else has a question or comment, I thought 614-292-8513. We'll take one more zoo question. Joe and Hilliard, you're on the air. Welcome, Joe. It's funny, the first two callers are not from Columbus, but that's okay.
Sure. Right.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are you? I live in Franklin County, and
okay.
I've always really supported the mayor, but I think I disagree with him on this issue. I have some comments. If he really wants to worry about inner-city children going to the zoo, we could bus them free to the zoo and let them in free at a much lower rate than we could if we built a $65 million zoo downtown.
Okay.
But the other major problem I have with this tax is that it's permanent. This should be a renewing tax. It's way out of bounds, in my view. And those are the problems I have. And I'm sorry, Mayor, I really like what you do, and I like the zoo. I just can't agree with you on this tax.
I understand.
Joe, thanks a lot for your call. 614-292-8513, if you have a question or comment. Last November, voters faced another proposed levy. This one, a 23.5% proposed property tax increase for Columbus City Schools. Looking back, It was a sound defeat, no question. What do you attribute it to? Is there any one major thing, or what issues?
I think are a combination of things why it felt soundly. I look back at it in hindsight, and I can give it an honest evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
My honest evaluation on this is that there were multiple reasons. Probably the biggest one was in May of last year, the school system and the treasurer were saying we needed a levy. And that the school district was in financial straits. Well, I believe that. About 2 weeks out before the election, I can tell you what the internal poll said. They were just right with the dispatch poll. It was a dead heat. And about 2 weeks thereabouts, the district came out and said, oh, we have enough money to last the 2016 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we'll have more money than we expected because of changed circumstances. And, you know, I think my jaw dropped along with a lot of people's jaws dropped. And that was a major reason why people did not vote for it. And we saw our internal polls begin to fall rapidly at that point. So, again, needed the money at the outset. And then somewhere along the way, we don't need the money. We have a surplus. But more money than was expected. And think the other thing was that we tried to do everything at once. There was a 55 recommendations of the Education Commission, and all of them, I think, were solid recommendations. We're still going to try to pursue those, but only over time. We put together the Education Commission. They came up with 55 recommendations. A lot of those recommendations were incorporated into the levy. And some of them are controversial. Some of them were major changes.
The charter school funding.
Charter school was one of them. There was other things in there. And I think we tried to do too much at one time, as opposed to taking parts of it and proving success and then moving on to the next part. Those were the were two of the big reasons, I think, that the school district fell. And then I think that there was the overriding umbrella reason was that the district was under investigation by the auditor's office, the FBI. There was a strong sense of frustration and distrust. To the district and everybody associated with the district. Why raise taxes for a reform, a total reform, not incremental reform, total reform for a district that said they didn't have money that now has money for a group of people that you don't trust? Tough to say yes on that. And you add all those three things together, and it failed. Now, mind you, at the same time, we had the city of Columbus's bond package on,
mm-hmm.
which passed by the same percentage that the levy fell. And I was running both of those. And the bond package was involving, it was a big ask by the public. And it was for our infrastructure, and it was passed and on the same day. So the public felt, I think they had some trust with city government. We had a strong record of fiscal responsibility. We do what we say we're going to do, and it follows all the way through. And it was a contrast there. And it was almost the same exact vote on the opposite side. So it was interesting. I learned a lot. I learned more about education than I ever thought I would or ever thought I could. But what it did also was instill in me a desire and a commitment to continue to fight for kids in this city and I'm going to continue to do so.
We're going to talk about that more in just a minute.
Okay.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest this hour is Columbus Mayor Mike Coleman. We've been talking about the zoo. We've moved on to education. If you have a question or comment about something to do with education or other things, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We were talking about education. We were talking about the defeat of the proposed property tax levy last November. You just talked about why you think and why you know it failed.
Three reasons.
Yep. The fact that they didn't need the money as badly as people thought. The scandal surrounding the data rigging and the distrust of the school district.
Right.
And
we asked for too much.
And too much to get
too much
to
at
too
one
much.
Time.
So now you're kind of breaking it down. Now you're breaking it down, and the district decided not to return to the ballot this spring, obviously. Superintendent
Dan Good.
Which was a
good decision.
Yeah, he said the board would work with you and city council to make the changes that are possible without the levy, and one of those is the creation of a cabinet-level education department.
Right.
They approved that this week.
Right.
You appointed Rhonda Johnson, the city's new education director. We knew that was going to happen. She's going to retire her post and start that new job in June. What's her first assignment?
Pre-K. In my State of the City and in the Education Commission report, it recommended that the key to education, especially in the early age, is learning earlier. And so pre-K education is the focal point for some time now. It's going to be from here on. So I set aside about $8 million of city resources, of which about $5 million will be used for pre-K in the city. And there's this third grade guarantee, a reading guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
And the concern is that it kicks off this year. 50%, 50, 60, whatever, about half the kids taking that test will not pass it and therefore will be held back a grade. And study after study after study in America, it says the earlier a kid begins to read and begins to learn, the better off they are with third grade standards. And that has been proven the case in Denver, in Tennessee, Georgia, and even Georgia, and other places around America. And so while it isn't a silver bullet, I believe, and I think a lot of people believe, and every study suggests or says that early education will help dramatically. And so Rhonda, Director Johnson's first assignment is to get the $5 million into appropriate pre-K hands. And our goal is to have universal pre-K in this city. Now, this $5 million will not be enough to educate every child in the city district.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a big first step. And our goal is to find more resources over time to have universal pre-K in the city of Columbus. That's my goal, to have universal pre-K.
And that
then when that occurs, over time, those kids will pass that third grade reading test, and they'll go on to fourth grade, and they'll be better students as time goes on. Now, there's other things to do with respect to education. But I think this is a crisis, and we got to get to it now. And this crisis is going to take 2 or 3 years to solve, to be honest with you. So I wanted to jump right into pre-K right away. That's the first thing on the agenda.
How closely is Rhonda Johnson expected to work with the school board? It's pre-K, so it doesn't necessarily involve city schools, but...
Well, it does. It involves cities. Our goal, my objective and the objective of the city of Columbus is to look after education for kids that are in the Columbus School District in our city. And so she'll be serving as an ex officio member on the board. And, you know, and she'll be able to offer her opinion. You know, we'll talk. We'll have conversations, me and her and other people. We'll input into decisions that are made at the school district level. Although she will not have a vote, she'll have a voice. And that, I think, will be helpful as well. We'll continue meeting with the district. And our objective is to just do better. It's just to do better and do a lot better soon. I think Dan Good's appointment as
superintendent
has been a very good thing for the district. He brings new perspective and opportunities. So I think, frankly, you know, when the levy failed, I've always felt that we can't allow the levy a failure of a levy to result in the failure to our kids, and that we have to work really hard and turn what we tried to do into a positive thing for our young people. Don't just walk away from it. We got a problem here, and we got to make sure our kids are educated. And so I'm in it. And for much of my administration, I was sort of on the periphery, but I'm in it. And I'm in it to continue to fight for our kids and make judgments along the way. I do not control the school board. I will not be controlling the school board, but it's important to have a voice there, and that's what Rhonda Johns will bring to us.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest, of course, is Columbus Mayor Mike Coleman, talking about education right now. If you have a question or comment, you can join the conversation, 614-292-8513. Now, you said you described as being kind of on the periphery of this issue for much of your career as mayor, but you did have an office of education early in your mayoral tenure. What happened to that?
We had budget problems. If you recall, City of Columbus had a financial crisis ourselves. And I did have an Office of Education. It was not at the level of this one in terms of the engagement and involvement that we'll have. It was focused primarily on after-school care is what it was focused on. And we're still doing after-school care. But I had to eliminate the office itself. It's purely based on budget considerations. I think it was like, I'm thinking 2006 range, something like that. And this office will be substantially staffed. We have some very smart people in it, very good people, good education experts. And they'll offer lots of advice and lots of input and lots of guidance to the district and others. And really step up this idea of universal pre-K over time for young people in our city, and along with other things as we develop it.
Carl in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You think pre-K is waiting too long?
Yes, I do. Good morning, Mr. Mayor. I've supported you since we met at Julie Boylan's house in 1992. We've been casually acquainted for a long time. And the city has prospered under your management, and I'm hoping that you can have a positive influence on the public education system. Here's my thought. I hear these sob stories on radio about single mothers and how difficult it is to raise their three children. And never on these stories do they talk about the fathers. Pre-K is too late. It's more like pre-birth, preconception. Do any of the education system's plans intend to focus on getting hit-and-run fathers back re-involved with their children?
Actually, I'm already doing that in a lot of different ways. there are too many single mothers in our city, and they're strong women, and they're beautiful women, and they work hard for their children. Many of them are working a job or two and raising their children, and God bless them. They need help. But at the same time, I do think that men need to take care of their children. You know, men who have children need to do need to be fathers to them and engage as a father, even if the mother and the father can't be together as a unit, that they have an obligation to raise their children in a positive way. And so I actually have a program at the Urban League. It's called Father to Father. And we've had some 2,000 fathers go through it. And the idea there is bringing in fathers, and they're signing up and talking to them about the need to engage with their children. It's an actual program, and there's a graduation, and I think that helps. But, you know, I am sometimes very frustrated and very upset at men who walk away from their children. They have an obligation to raise their children just like the mother.
Do you think it's always that simple?
No, it's not simple. I'm not saying it is simple. You know, you could, you know, point to a lot of reasons. But it all goes back to what the right thing to do is. And nothing's simple anymore. Everything's complicated. But men have an obligation to raise their kids. It's simple in that way.
Carl, thanks a lot for your call. Adil in Dublin, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, this is Adil. I just wanted to thank you guys for bringing this topic up. I want to say good morning to everybody. And my question to you guys is, I personally feel like it's very important for kids to be given a good education at early stages. If we expect our kids to grow and be successful and help the city or the state of Ohio, we need to invest heavily in the early stages. And at this point, my question to you is, how much help are we given to the teachers, picking the best teachers, and also funding, you know, or giving a good income for the teachers to make sure that they do a good job with the pre-K and the early stages of their our kids' education? Thank you.
Thank you, Adil.
Well, first of all, let me just say that I think teachers are critical in the education process, they're very important. In some cities, the mayors go to battle with the teachers. In my case, I think teachers are extraordinarily valuable into the education process. It is the probably the most important profession is the teacher. It is a skill, and it is something we should hold up, and I think we should pay them appropriately. We should hold them up, and they should be fully engaged with our young people. And there's many, many, many good teachers in our city. And I have to give them a lot of kudos and credit for what they do. With respect to pre-K, what our intention is that we will set aside $8,400 per kid and it's a full year program.
That's in line with
pretty
good programs.
Yeah, it's a pricing. Really solid, strong program, it's 12 months. It is 6-7 hours a day, full day. We priced it, you know, with the belief, based upon our study and information from other areas around the country, that this is, you know, this will help educate those young folks, and we have good teachers and people to help educate our kids at that level. So, we'll be actually entering into contracts here soon And I wish I, maybe I have it right here, entering a contract soon with organizations that will be providing pre-K for our young people in the next month or two. But definitely, well, the applications are due May 9th.
Okay, that's coming up very quickly then. May 9th. You're going to get this off the ground by next year.
Yeah.
Next
school year.
Yeah.
The awards will be made May 30th. We'll have a 1-teacher-to-10-student ratio, and $8,400 per student. They'll be paid to providers in quarterly installments, and we're ready to go. So we're moving ahead, and we're very serious about this.
How will you decide which children do get to participate in the city-funded program?
Well, here's the idea, and I have people figuring out the details of this. But the idea of this is that there's over 4,000 or so children in our city at that pre-K age, about 4,300 is not my recollection. A big chunk of those children are in Head Start. And while there's never enough money in Head Start, there is money for Head Start. There's never enough spaces, slots for Head Start, there is money there. Our goal is to get those families who are just above that in income.
Okay.
And so there's a
the next
level.
Okay.
Now, not all those kids will be served.
Mm-hmm.
But the kids that will be served will be better off. And the goal is to provide in this city. My goal is to provide universal pre-K. And so there, we don't have all the resources available for it. It was in the levy, but we're still searching for opportunities for that.
My guest is Columbus Mayor Mike Coleman. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. My guest this hour, Columbus Mayor Mike Coleman. We've been talking about the Columbus Zoo levy. We've talked extensively about his plans for education and pre-K education in the city of Columbus. Moving on to the neighborhoods, you mentioned earlier that a lot of work goes on in the neighborhoods, not necessarily downtown. I've got a caller now from John from the Hilltop. Hi, John.
Good morning. Thanks, Ann, for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
I wanted to ask about vacant and abandoned houses. I live in the Central Hilltop area. We've got a lot of vacant houses up here. And about twice a year or so, I walk the block here. I check for open windows and doors on these houses. And I put in complaints about the ones I find that aren't very well secured. And I've been doing this for some years now. Last week, I checked out an area on my street here on North Oakley and North Wheatland, around an area of about 70 houses. Now, around 20 of these were vacant, and of these 20 vacant, about 6 had open windows or doors. Now, I work from home. I listen to the police scanner. And not a day goes by that there aren't police runs to these vacant houses in my area. Just 2 days ago, the fire department responded to a vacant house fire off of West Mound Street here. I'm getting frustrated that these houses aren't getting secured very well. When you see these houses on TV or if you get into any of these poor neighborhoods, you'll notice that the vacant houses may have a door boarded up or a window here and there, but you don't see all the entry points boarded up in a systematic way.
So, John, did you want to ask the mayor a question?
Yeah, okay. There has to be a way to properly secure these vacant houses. What do you think, Mayor?
There absolutely must be secured. All these vacant houses need to be secured.
It sounds like you should put John on the payroll.
Yeah, well, it'd be great. you sound like you got time to look at these things, and I think that's great that you walk around. I think that's fabulous. But what I think you should do, and I would ask that you do, is that you make a list of the houses that are not secured because they have to be secured by law, and get them to us, get them to my office, and we'll go through the process to make sure that they get secured. That is a requirement by law that these houses become secure. But I want to talk about something else when it comes to vacant and abandoned houses. It's directly related. There are too many in this community. It all derives from the financial collapse of the banks back in a few years ago, and it is a major problem for cities, especially in Ohio. Cleveland, Columbus, Dayton, Toledo, and Cincinnati, we have major, all of us, have major vacant and abandoned housing issues, and it's largely due to state laws, and we're trying to get those laws changed. But having said that, one of the things we're trying to do in the city of Columbus is that I set up an effort, and our goal was to tear down, I think it was 900 vacant and abandoned houses of the worst and the worst of the community. And we're well on our way in getting that accomplished. I've set aside millions of dollars to do so, and we've received some state monies as well to supplement the millions that I've set aside. And we had, and I gave a goal of 900, I think by, I can't remember if it was the next year or year after, but we're going to meet that goal and probably exceed that goal. But we're not just tearing down vacant and abandoned houses. Those are the worst of the worst, and we still have some more to go. We want to rehab houses that are savable. That's the most expensive proposition. And getting control of these houses are very difficult. We just can't go in and do it. We have to get control of them first. And the city attorney's office has been really great in providing us with that, you know, opportunity to get control of these houses that of property owners that live in other parts of the world, other parts of the nation, and we're making progress there. But it is slow progress, but it is progress that is being made.
John, thanks a lot for that call. We appreciate it. I wanted to talk about the Republicans turned the city down, but Columbus is in the running still for the Democratic National Convention. What did city boosters learn about why the RNC wasn't interested that they applied to the pitch to the DNC?
Well, we haven't applied to the pitch to the DNC yet, but we intend to.
Okay.
We just got that package, I think it was last week, reviewing it, and my people say that we are we're going to be eligible, and we're going to make a submittal. Now, let me talk about the RNC. I firmly believe to this day that we should have been in the finals. We met every criteria, every metric that they used to measure cities. Mm-hmm. We were not selected into the finals. I have to tell you, in 2006, I competed, you know, I thought about submitting an application for the RNC back in 2006, and I went in for the interview and got a better feel for what they were looking for, and I withdrew the petition. I withdrew the application. Mm-hmm. And the reason I withdrew the application is because I felt we weren't ready for it. We didn't meet the metrics. So we'll go back and look at it for another day. In the meantime, several new hotels were built. One of them we helped build, the Hilton downtown. Other things occurred. We had other things going on in our city. The city kind of transformed in that period of time from 2006 to 2014. Major changes in the city in every respect. We met the metrics. We submitted it and made the presentation. We weren't selected. Now, I'm not going to say anything negative about the RNC or our competitors, but we should have been in the finals. That's all I'll say. Now, having said that, the DNC is next. And I will say that on DNC will probably be the underdog in that bid. It's a bigger convention. But I think that we meet their metrics as well. And so we're going to fight for it as well. But, you know, here's the deal, Ann. In these sorts of things, it is about competing for the prize. And
you mean to be in the running?
This
is
to be, just to be in the running. Because the truth is, prior to now, we weren't, prior to recently, we weren't even in the game. We weren't, no one would even really think about applying for Republican National Convention or a Democratic National Convention. And now we're looking at that and we're seriously competing for a major world-class convention for the city of Columbus. And so if we don't win in 2016, for the 2016 convention, we need to look at 2020. The fact of the matter is we're at a point in our city's development that we're no longer the cow town of the past, but this economic, vibrant powerhouse that we can now compete for major events of the world. And we should be thinking in that way. And so part of this is saying, look, let's start thinking in that way. And let's start competing. And let's give our best foot forward. I tell you, I'm not a hockey, I'm a great hockey fan. I didn't used to be a hockey fan, but right now I love hockey. I love hockey. When Blue Jackets came to town, I said, I'm going to learn the game. Now I know the game. I didn't grow up on hockey. I grew up on basketball, but same principles apply. And so,
meaning they didn't win the playoffs, but they made it through, did a good job in the first series of the playoffs, yeah. And they got a lot of good exposure for the city.
Absolutely. In addition, the way you win hockey games is to shoot the puck. This is about shooting the puck. You can't win the game unless you shoot the puck. And we're going to shoot the puck. And we got to put our best foot forward and give it our all to be successful. And that's what this is all about. And we want to win, too.
Michael in Hilliard, you're on the air. You wanted to talk about transportation issues. So did I, so I'll let you start.
Thank you, Ann. Yeah, Mayor, I think Cleveland has a chance for the DNC. They have 28 passenger trains that pull into that city every week. Columbus, nothing. Do you ever see the day where Columbus have a passenger train again?
Nice context. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
The answer is yes, I do. I am a strong believer in the need for rail in the city of Columbus. It is a very expensive proposition, but I believe it is something that will make our city competitive. We're the largest city in the nation without rail, any form of rail, for passengers. As you recall, I tried a trolley.
Because everybody thinks it's a Rice-A-Roni trolley. They don't think about...
Well, it wasn't a Rice-A-Roni trolley. But having said that, I believe in rail, whether it be light rail or other forms of rail. And I think that the competitive cities of the future, as we move 25, 50 years from now, will be those cities that have figured this out. And I see a city like Salt Lake City that doesn't have a lot of traffic congestion. They built rail. They didn't build rail because of traffic congestion. They built rail because of the economic development. And I believe that rail will lead to strong economic development in our community. And it is transit. Of course, it's transportation, but it's far more than transportation. So some steps we've taken. this past State of the City, which I'm sure everybody was sitting by their radios and TVs watching.
We'll have a link to it on our website.
I talked about, I want to start the discussion again. And the way I want to start this discussion is looking at our airport. And I pulled together a task force to begin the discussion on three major topics. The first major topic is direct flights in and out of Columbus around the state, around the nation. We need more. I see it in my conversations when I talk to potential businesses relocating to Columbus.
Okay.
Conventions. Direct flights are very important to the economic aspect of a community, and we need more. That's the first thing the task force is looking at. And how do we do that? What do we need to improve more direct flights? Then number two is looking at the economic development opportunities around the airport. Number three is utilizing the airport as more than just an airport, but a multimobile hub of sort, multiple transportation. So in theory, looking at it as a place for buses, a place for a train, potentially, a place for, it's situated perfectly right between Easton and downtown, and easy access to OSU. There is now a track that exists right now between downtown and the airport. And so why not look at it as a potential rail, passenger rail between the airport and downtown, maybe someday, maybe to Easton, but look at the airport more than just a place where you jump on a plane, but a place that is a transportation center for multiple modes of transportation. I can tell you that there was a time when that was what the airport was, that when you wanted to, people from the East Coast would ride in a train to get to the airport in Columbus, get on a plane in Columbus and fly west. That doesn't take place because we don't have passenger rail anymore into the city.
What about, we just have a few minutes left, but what about the proposal to bring passenger rail in through the northern part of the state, through Indiana and down to Columbus? You got another state involved in
now. And I'm at the leading forefront of that.
Okay.
Brought together mayors and governors and folks on that. And so here's the idea. The idea is to create a passenger of high-speed train between Chicago and Columbus. And we need the cooperation of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. Lima would be a city that would be involved in this, city of Columbus, Fort Wayne, and then Chicago. And it would have speeds of over 100 miles an hour, a three-hour ride, and it'd be very efficient. Now we're now studying it. We're trying to see if it's feasible, how much it would cost, and whether it's doable. But very preliminarily, I'm optimistic. But we have to get a lot of partners in the room, state government, and private sector folks really kind of look at it in a more serious, intimate way.
Mayor Mike Coleman, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Hope you can come by sooner next time.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. That's Columbus Mayor Mike Coleman. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.